Okay, today is the 11th of Adar, the 26th of February. 11th of Adar is the first date given in the Mishnah Megillah for when you can start reading the Megillah for people who live in the outlying area. So the Aura of Purim is upon us. And that's certainly brings an added level of simcha. We continue in our study of the Olam Shel Emes in the Sefer Olam Hamidos, or on top of Mem Gimel. One of the things we saw last week was the importance of being willing to take tochacha. Interesting story involving the Ger Rebbe. I mentioned last time he cites it as being with the Imre Emes and the Sfas Emes. I saw it from Rav Avadya Yosef, it was involving the Sfas Emes and his grandfather, the Chiddush Arim. But regardless, an inspiring story about wanting to hear tochacha even when not having been guilty as charged. I think we actually did the first paragraph of Mem Gimel. So let's continue with Lihis Asek B'Masa U'Matan Be'Emun. On page Mem Gimel, the new section there, to undertake business with integrity, let's say. Amru Chazal, our sages say, it's the Gemara in the second paragraph of Masachas Shabbos, B'Shah Shemachnisin Adam Ladin. At the time when they bring a person into judgment, Omrim Lo, they say to him, Nososa v'nasata be'emuna. Literally, did you take and give? Did you do business with integrity? Kavata itim la Torah. Did you establish time for Torah? Asakta b'piria v'rivia. Did you, were you involved in having children? Umavur, it's clear, shesheela harishona shesholem ha'adam ba'olam ha'emes hu'aim nahag ba'asako b'yashras. It's clear from the Gemara, the first question that a person is asked, is did he conduct himself in his business with straightness, with honesty?
Rabbi Steinberg, there are different sets of rules for men and women. So are we asked the same questions?
I think the question of integrity, probably yes. We'll see soon. He's going to talk about the obligation of Torah study, and that might be a little different. Women do have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but it's not the same as men. But I think the general questions are probably the same. Integrity is relevant to everyone. Next paragraph, in the middle of Mem Gimel. Tanan Beresh Perek Hazav. We learn in the Mishnah beginning of the fourth parak of Bab Metziah, parak known as Hazav. The Mishnah says as follows: Nasan lo ma'os v'lo moshach himenu peros yochel la'atzer bo. If he gave him money, he's buying fruit. He gave the money for the fruit, but he has not yet done what we call a kinyan mashicha. He has not yet drawn them, pulled them. He has not done an action to demonstrate ownership. So, what that parak has a lot about is how kinyanim are affected. What makes a transaction finalized? This is a very important topic in halacha with a lot of detail, and it's one of the things that's studied in yeshivas at length. There's far in this fact about kinyanim. It's one of the reasons why you authorize the rabbi to sell your chametz and don't do it yourself before Pesach, because what, especially between a Jew and a non-Jew, what exactly would be considered a valid transaction, particularly when you're not relocating the item? He's not taking all the chametz out of everybody's house. So what it affects a true transaction or not is complicated. So what the Gemara is talking about over there is whether mo'os konos, whether giving money is considered a transaction. It's a little complicated. Min HaTorah, maybe it does, and then the rabbi said that they made that it wouldn't, because you could have a situation where I paid for something, but it's still in your house. You didn't transfer the object, the merchandise, to me, and then maybe you'll be less careful about guarding it, and then if there's a fire, so I'll lose it. I paid for it already, but it's still in your head. It could create for a negative situation. So basically, the halacha emerges that just giving money does not affect the transaction, at least for movable objects. That's what that mishnah is referring to. Nasan lo ma'as v'lo moshach imenu peiros yachal lachzer bo. If he gave the money, but he has not yet drawn the fruit, so he hasn't done an action that fully finalizes the sale, the transaction, yochel lachzer bo, he can back out. Aval amru, but they said, mi shepara me anche dar hamabel mi dar haflaga hu osali para mi misha ina omed b'diburo. The Mishnah is a concept there called a mi shepara. Mi shepara literally means the one who paid back. the one who avenged, the one who paid back the generation of the flood and of the dispersion, he is destined to pay back from somebody who does not keep his word. It's considered a curse from the rabbis. In other words, there are cases where in halacha, you're not really bound yet. The transaction hasn't happened, but there's a commitment. There's a level of commitment. So you see how strongly the Chacham felt about keeping one's word, even when there hasn't been a transaction. It's not as if the sale went through and now I'm trying to take it back, but because there's some level of commitment, even though technically there's no full transaction, the sages spoke very strongly against somebody who backs out. Ubi Gemara Sanhedrin, the Gemara Sanhedrin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Bore, Kama Gadol Kocha Shel Chomos. Come take a look how great or how impactful is the impact of Chomos. We often translate as extortion, but it means any monetary wrongdoing. Sherei Dor HaMabel Avru Al HaKol. The generation of the flood had violated everything. V'lo Nechtam Aleim Gzar Dinam Ad Sheposhti Yideim Begezel. But their decree hadn't been sealed upon them until their hands got involved in theft. Shenemar, as it says, Kimala Ha'aras Chomot Mipneim V'hinin Nimashchisim Esaret. Because the land has become filled with chamas because of them, and behold, I will destroy them with the land. So, at the beginning of the parsha, there it says that there was all kinds of other hashchasa, corruption and destruction, and in matters between man and man and God. But it's because of chamas that Hashem says to Noach, "I'm going to destroy the world." V'yesh levar, one has to explain lama nechtam gdinim dafka l'gezel. So, why was their fate sealed specifically because of theft? If you look at the way the Torah seems to rank wrongdoing and Averos, so Arayos and Avodah Zarah would seem worse, and they had plenty of that going on. Vinira, it appears, Kivin Demidas Ha'emes Hiyasod HaBinyan. This is what he's been saying throughout this section. Since the trait of truth is the foundation of the building. Even though other sins are more severe, but one can fix them, so long as a person is able to accept the truth. We see this all the time. I deal with it in education. If a student's doing the wrong thing, but he knows it's the wrong thing, that's half the battle. But if he's doing the wrong thing and he's in denial or just not in perception of reality, there's nothing to deal with. There's no starting point. So Rav Kestenbaum suggests that's what it is over here. If at least there's an accurate assessment of self and of one's role in the world, and so on, then we can get somewhere. But if it's a sheker, there are people who are doing the worst things in the world but are convinced that they're fine, that they're great. When it comes to theft, if a person doesn't have the straightness to recognize that what's in the other guy's hand is not his. What do you mean? I didn't do anything wrong. You did. But he doesn't recognize it. Afsa kol tikva. Then all hope is lost. The word afsa really means, is from the word ephes, meaning zero. There is zero hope. Zero prospects for change if we don't recognize what's what and what belongs to whom. Turning the page. The Fize Yesh Lahavin. Based on this, one has to understand how the Amr Rabbi Musaf Sanhedrin. See, now it's interesting. This section is safer. This is a little bit pilpulish. And sometimes in Musa we're just talking about concepts, and sometimes we're citing different Gemaras and trying to reconcile them. So take a look at the following. The first paragraph of Sanhedrin, it says, Ein Chilas Dino Shel Adam Nidon Ela Al Devrei Torah. The beginning of a person's judgment is on nothing but Divrei Torah. Uvitosus Sham Hikshu Shazes Sosa Lagamar Shabbos Hanal. So the Tosus right there on the side of the page asks, this contradicts what we saw before. We read the Gemara from Shabbos that says the first thing they ask a person is, were you honest in business? Nasosa v'nasata be'amuna. So here it says he's judged for words of Torah. So Tosus raises the question. Shashayla harishona he nasos v'nasata b'amuna. There it said otherwise. V'tir tzutosus answers. Now, there's really two answers there in Tosus. The first one is like we're dealing with different types of people. one who does study. But the second answer is the one that's a little easier to understand. So the second answer is Shishneim Emes. Both statements are true. Shoalim Tchila Al Masu Matan Be'emunah. The first thing they ask is, were you honest? Did you have integrity? But he'll be judged first for Torah. So that's what Tosa says. The matter needs to be understood. Mimanavshach. Mimanavshach means literally from what you want. It means from whichever perspective you want. It's a way of saying in Gemara language, whichever way you look at it. Mimanavshach. It's yeshivis. Good word to know. So Mimanavshach, whichever way you look at it, Imli Mutara Choshev Yosar. If Torah is actually, the study of Torah is actually more important, Roy Gam Lishal Olav Tchila. So why is it just that he's judged for it first? He should also be asked about it first. V'imasu Matan Be'amun Yosef Choshev, and if being honest in business is more important, Roy Gam Lidon Olav Tchila. That's why do we have this split? You're asked this question first, but you're judged for this first. If this is more important, go all the way with this. If that's more important, go all the way with that. That's what he's asking. Tosa seems to present us with this concept that he's asked this question first, but he's judged for that first. Why this split? Ela nira, but it appears shavada chomor bittul Torah mimasu matan shelo be'emuna. Negating Torah, not studying Torah when one can, nullifying Torah is certainly worse than masu matan with faith. Shere talmud Torah keneged kulam. We say every day that the study of Torah is equal to everything. I will show alim tchila masu matan be'amuna shezehu yisod mahus ha'adam. It's not about an act, it's about his whole essence. In the source of an asata be'amuna, they're not asking you something about whether you did an aveira or not, or did a mitzvah or not. They're asking whether your whole modus operandi, your whole existence, was it straight or was it crooked? That is so foundational that the question is asked first. You have that sometimes where one thing can be a more severe transgression, but the other thing is a more fundamental violation of just, you know, being a human being. So that's what he's saying here. And the truth is, if you put the two Gemaras, it really stands out. Torah is everything, but they first ask you, Nasata Be'amuna. Why? That's one category of sin. It's not as broad as the whole Torah. But the answer is, if he's not a straight person, what is he? Kemosha Amr Chazal Derech Eretz Kadma La Torah. As the Chacham say, Derech Eretz comes before Torah. It's like the basis and the foundation. Rabbi Yerucham Levovitz in his Musar Shmuzin has a lot on this concept. So Ma'od Ma'od Tzarech Nizar B'mamon Chaveru. The person has to be very, very careful with his fellow's money. Kemosha Amr Chazal, as the Chacham say in Pirkei Avos, Yehi Mamon Chaveru Chachava V'alach Kishalach. The money of your friend should be dear to you like your own. Ve'od amru chazal, Achacham also say, kol ha'gozel es chaveru shava pruta ki'ilu notal neshmaso. Anybody who steals from his friend a shava pruta, which is like a nickel, a dime, the smallest like usable amount, it's like he took his soul. Chazal taking something that's not, that doesn't belong to somebody, they treat it with the highest severity, even if we're talking about a small amount. And I believe what he's bringing out here is it's not the amount, it's the yashrus. What's not mine is not mine. It doesn't matter if it's worth $1,000 or $1 or 50 cents. It's not mine. And here he makes a very beautiful point. Shemati me'arav Daniel Kalishlita. Again, Rabbi Daniel Kalish is the Rosh Yeshiva of the Waterbury Yeshiva, whom Rabbi Kestenbaum works closely with as a colleague. Rabbi Kalish is a very sought after machanech, something of a guru in inspiring youth to Torah. So he says a beautiful word here. She Yisro kishiyatz lemoshe Rabbeinu Amar. You look at Parshas Yisro. We read it a couple of weeks ago. When Yisro gives the advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, v'shaftu asa'am b'chol eis. You'll judge the people all the time, but he had already said it's too much for you to do alone. So v'haya kol hadavar ha'gadol yaviyu eilecha. Every big thing they should bring to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, the big cases, and the small things they'll judge. It'll become easier for you. You can't take all the cases yourself. The big ones should be brought to you, and the smaller cases, with the other zakenim, will judge. But Yisro Amar Davar HaKatan V'Davar HaGadol. Yisro referred to the big things and the small things. Avol Eitzel Moshe Achar Kesheshama V'Kibel Atzas Yisro. But if you look later, after Moshe heard and accepted Yisro's advice, Kosev V'Shaftu Asam B'Chol Eis Es HaDavar HaKosha Yaviun El Moshe V'Chol HaDavar HaKatan Yishputu Heim. It says the difficult things they brought to Moshe and the small things they judged. So Yisro said big versus small, and when they actually implement it, based on Moshe's accepting of the suggestion, the difficult things they bring to Moshe and the small things they bring to the other judges. B'makom gadol ne'emar kasha. In place of gadol, it says difficult. So the truth, the Gemara points out the discrepancy and has a deeper concept there. He's going to talk at a pshat level. The vart that Rabbi Kaler said, I saw the Torah Tumima says basically the same idea, but not nearly as to the point of what we're studying. He's making he says it very beautifully here. V'hainu sheYisro chashuv shehamariva shenogim l'schum gadol shel kesav. Yisro thought quarrels that involve a large sum of money, chayotze bazeh, maybe it's not money, something else, shenechshavenei habrias, that are significant in people's eyes. It's not small claims court. It's big money. Yodun Moshe. So Moshe will judge. U'shar hadvarim haktanim yishputu acherim. And the other things that are small, others will judge. Avol Moshe heishiv shekol pruta hi she'ela gadola. Every nickel is a big question. She'ela shel ganeva. It's a question of theft. Should he have it or should he have it? Umali pruta achas, umali elef prutas. What's the difference if it's a one nickel or a thousand? Ela hakol tali bekoshu hadin. What it does depend on is the difficulty of the case. Hadvarim koshim ladun. The things that are difficult. Vafilu pruta achas, osim yadun hu. Even if it's about one nickel, but it's a complicated case. It involves the esoteric Torah concepts. Who's entitled to the nickel here? This is for the big leagues. This is for Moshe Rabbeinu. The hadvarim hakalim, and the easier things, even if it's about $1 million, but that's pretty open and shut. You know, that's straight out of that's a shach and chosh and mishpat. The regular judges can handle that. It's right there in the Shulchan Aruch. It's the sma, you know. The hadvarim hakalim yadunu shahar shoft, and the easier things, the other judges will judge. V'lamadna, it's a powerful insight. V'lamadna mizeh shetzricham anu lizar v'pruta achas ke'elef prutas. You have to be careful with one nickel. Like a thousand. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't care how much it was about. He cared how difficult it was. It was a difficult case. I'll take it. But the amount was not relevant. There's no grounds to be lenient or say we don't have to be so precise because we're only dealing with $100 here. Not a big case. So give it to the lower judge and whatever. He'll get it right. Maybe he won't. We're not talking about millions of dollars.
So was the reference already made to Pirkei Avos about like a mitzvah that you have to be? Did I like?
He made it earlier.
Is it sort of like that too? That that you can't differentiate between the mitzvahs. I think is the same.
Yeah.
Idea here.
Right, Rabbeinu Yonah says
you don't know the schar for the.
Right.
You can't determine the schar for like or lightning. I can't remember the
exact words. I believe Rabbeinu Yonah says there. Don't look. No, he says it in Shari Tshuva. Don't look at the size of the mitzvah. Don't look, or I should say it in English. Don't look at the size of the
reward.
Commandment. Look at the size of the commander.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's all basically the same.
Right.
Which would sort of.
Right. If Hashem says don't steal, don't steal. If Hashem says your friend's money should be kept as his, it doesn't really matter if
it's
about
a nickel or $100,000.
Right. Which is a. Amida, you find. I just had a Gemara in Bav Metzia. I teach the boys the second parak of Bav Metzia. So Gemara tells a story there. One of the Chachamim was visiting somebody's house, and something disappeared from the house. Somebody had taken it, and he watched. He saw one of the young Talmidim washed his hands and dried it in the other guy's shirt. He said, "He's the guy. He stole it because he doesn't care about people.
Doesn't
care about people's property." And they pushed him a little bit, and he admitted he stole it. So it's a mindset. A mindset of Yashar. So if a person's a Yashar, he's a Yashar with big things and small things. So Amru Chazal, top of page Memhei. our sages say a Gemara in Baba Kama. We're learning a lot of different Gemaras today. Aresha gozal sa'a shel chitin. Behold, somebody stole a measure of wheat. Tochana losha va'afa. He ground it. He mixed it with water and kneaded it. He baked it. He baked a beautiful challah. V'hifrish mena challah. And he did the separating of the mitzvah challah. Ketzad mevarach. How can he make a bracha? Ein zeh mevarach el mena'etz. This is not blessing, but cursing. A person who steals, it makes a blessing. It's like cursing Hashem. So what does the Gemara mean? Venir bekavonas chazal he shekol mahusa shel bracha he hakara shekol davar hu me'es Hashem. What's the whole idea of a bracha?
Got to
make a bracha. Yeah, make a bracha on something. Is that everything comes from Hashem? By the way, the Rambam says the same way we make a bracha on a food, we make a bracha on a mitzvah. Because a food is a physical benefit, and a mitzvah is a spiritual benefit. But Hashem is giving me benefits. He's giving me gifts. L'Hashem ha'aretz u'mlo'a. To Hashem belongs the land and everything in it. V'zeh she'gonav, a person who stole, v'ada ein lo ha'kara, so he doesn't have this recognition. Shem kein lama lo ligzol. He thought Hashem provides for him, and Hashem provides for everybody what they're supposed to have, so what am I stealing with that belongs to the other guy? Hello, Hashem, Shesholet al kol ha'aretz, gozer parnasas kol chai. Hashem, who rules over the whole world, decrees the sustenance of every living person. Kamo shomru chazal, as the Gemara says in Be'ah, kol mezonos v'shalotim k'tzuvim lo mer Hashanah v'ad yom ha'kippurim, chutz me'otzos, shabosos v'otzos, yom tovim, otzos ben l'tal matar. Basically, all the income a person is going to have is determined in the season of the Days of Judgment, beginning of the year. Except what he spends on Shabbos and Yom Tov and raising his children to Torah, that there, if he puts more in, he gets more. But basically, there's a set amount. The point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu determines what we're supposed to have. It's not we who determine it. It's not us. V'lachein ein zeh mevarach el menayit. So a person's not blessing, he's cursing. Shekol ha'maisim shelo morim al ha'hepach shel ha'bracha. His whole action, the whole history of that blessing, is the opposite of a blessing. So he's making a declaration where everything he did until then indicates the opposite. Ukesheh adam motzeis ato b'nisayon shel geneva. When a person finds himself in a nisayon, a trial, where he has a temptation to engage in theft or something of the like, oshar mirma, or any other type of chicanery or trickery, alav ladas, it's incumbent upon him to know, to remember, aside from the fact that he's getting himself in trouble for the world to come, he's incurring guilt. He's not going to gain anything in this world either. Later on, there's a section about gvura, strength of character. When it says in Mishlei, its ways are the ways of pleasantness and all its paths are peace. Shederach haTorah kula l'toelus haAdam, that the way of Torah is entirely for man's benefit. Bein ba'olam hazeh, bein ba'olam haba, whether in this world or the next. It's not that you torture yourself in this world, and it'll be good in the next world. Umasha amru Chazal, when Chazal say nasasa v'nasata be'amuna, this is a famous verb. Rabbi Kestenbaum says it here, but a lot of people, actually, just a week or two ago. We have a schus and a sifter now that Rabbi Benjamin Kaplan is teaching a shir for us. He's a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, a person who learned under Gedolei Yisrael, happens to be a great grandson of Rabbi Yerucham of Lubavitz. He comes in from Elkins Park. He's teaching a few days a week for us. So he mentioned this vart to me. He actually had it up on the board. I walked into his classroom. The following vart that people say when the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, Nesasav and Nesata Be'amuna, is the first question they ask you in the world to come. Did you do business with emuna, with integrity? The simple pshat certainly is, it means, were you a person of emuna? Did you have integrity when you did business? But you could also take it colloquially. How do we use the word be'emuna? With faith in Hashem. Did you do business with faith in Hashem? Because ultimately it's the same thing. If I believe that Hashem provides, my job is just to make a shtadlus, but He's watching the world, and if I do something unfair or illegal to get ahead, it's not going to gain me anything. So if that's my mindset, I have emuna in Hashem, so then I would not do something wrong in my interaction with the other person. So, Masha Amar Chazal, Nasasa V'Nasata Be'amuna, Yesh Lefarash Be'amuna, Hayne Be'amuna Hashem. You could explain emunah meaning faith in Hashem, not with integrity the way we would generally explain this phrase, but the way we colloquially use the word emunah. She'im ha'odam be'emes ma'amin ba'ashkochas Hashem. If the person in truth really believes in the providence of Hashem, vadei lo yipol yidei ha'yetzer ligzol mechaber. He will not fall into the yetzahara of stealing from his friend. Elo she'alein lada she'lefa'amim nechshalem anu begezol shelo b'mechaber. But we have to know that at times we fall, we stumble into the sin of theft without intending to do so, maybe without awareness. Kosav HaRambam, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuvah, she'esh chamisha dvarim she'osa osan inchas kosav l'oshav mehen, l'fi she'en dvarim kalim ba'eni rov ha'adam. There are five things that people who do them tend not to do tshuva. Why? Because we don't even recognize that we're doing them. It's not a big, or we don't realize we're doing anything wrong. It's not a big deal. It's really not a big deal. He sins and he doesn't think he's doing a sin. Veharishon, the first one is.
Give us an example of that.
Yeah, here it is. Veharishon, ha'ochel misuda she'inim misapekas labalea, is literally the phrase means a person who eats from a meal that's insufficient for its owner. He doesn't really have enough for himself, and I'm taking from him. Ze avak gezel. This is like the dust, the subcategory of gezel. V'umadama shalachota. And he imagines he didn't do anything wrong. V'yama kluma chalti ala bershusan. I only ate with their permission.
But I'm sorry, I don't understand what that means. Eat for a meal that's insufficient for the owner. What does that mean?
It really means where the person feels pressure. It could be literal or it could be a metaphor for something else. But where somebody feels pressure to give to me when he really doesn't have enough for himself.
But how would the other person know that?
Well, we have to be sensitive. That's why I tell the boys, don't mooch. Buy your own snack in the vending machine. right? That's
something. It comes up with seminary girls in Israel all the time.
I can imagine that.
What do you mean?
There are people who, in Aristotle, have company. You're supposed to have company, and you get a call from three seminary girls, and they want to come. And I know people who've been in a house where they knew that the people told their kids, don't eat chicken because there's not enough for the guests. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. I mean, it was...
Yeah, that's literal. In fact,
probably... So the Avera is on the person who's asking to be invited.
Yeah.
If they know the situation.
Asking to be invited or not being sensitive. In fact, in Israel, the land of Israel would be a place where there probably is a lot of this, because there's a lot of Hachnas Zarachim and there's a lot of poverty. So one has to be careful. What do you mean? I didn't do anything wrong. Invited me. He said I could come.
I wonder if it's the same thing. This is on essentially food and money. What about time?
Like when so I said it can like be a metaphor for other things too.
Exactly. And you know, the person won't say no, but you shouldn't be asking somebody who's already.
Right. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's more subtle and you have to use careful judgment or find out the facts. But certainly when it's literally, it's a very bad thing.
One more question. So what's the responsibility of the person who's asked? Who knows they don't have enough chicken? Who knows that they're impoverished? Who knows that they really shouldn't be doing this? Don't they have enough rice to say, to tap dance out of it?
Where's the honesty on that part?
Chazal are putting the guilt here on the asker.
But what if they don't know?
Okay, so it happens. I mean,
no, but if let's say you're the person and you keep getting, you know, this girl comes and the next week her friend, she brings two more friends, and mm-hmm. the next week she brings her three other friends. At what point does the Baal HaSabayas or the Baal, you know, do you have a, you would,
yeah, I mean, there can be an aspect of embarrassment, there can be an aspect of pressure, of sympathy for people who are far away from home, whatever, but yeah, really, we're supposed to be able to say no. Someone involved should, whoever could protest something and doesn't, if there's somebody who could step in and say, well, this might be momentarily awkward, but I should clarify what's going on here so all parties involved do the right thing henceforth, one should get involved. Yeah, yeah. V'lachein yesh lizar shalol ha'halchus es chaver she'itin lo davar machmas busha chayotze bazeh. It's relevant in business also. People don't want to sell something and pressuring, you know, there's sales and there's extortion, you know. Some the things that some people view as a mila, you know, he's able to get certain things done, but maybe by being a bulldozer, you know, that's not always so good.
You shouldn't pressure somebody, you shouldn't pressure his friend to give him something because of shame or the like. If he doesn't give it with a whole heart, it falls into the rubric of theft. Avak gezel, the dust of theft. When you sell things, this is sales, not to pressure the buyer. And certainly not to say things that are untrue in order to entice him to buy.
Does it apply to people who, like, you get these tzedakah phone calls and they say, you know, by the way, last year you gave 18, we were thinking maybe this year you'd give 36, and you say, well, really, I can only give you 18, or maybe I can't give you anything, and the person keeps pushing. Is there a problem in that?
Yeah, it's a fine line. It's a fine line. I mean, the famous story that Rav Zelig Epstein told us numerous times about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is that when he was sent to America to raise money for the kollel he was in, and they had given him a list of donors and a list of how much they gave last year, so he went to meet somebody in his office, and the man said, okay, how much did I give last year? So he read him the number. The man went back to his records and came back. He said, I didn't give that amount. I gave half of that. And Rav Yaakov said, I just lost my job, meaning I quit. And he was... he was not in a good position to be making any more money, but he would not be involved in something that misrepresented. In terms of pressuring, so it's a balance. I think one has to use good judgment. You know, fundraising involves some degree of pushiness. Okay, can we send you an envelope? Can we get, okay, but yeah, you have to know. I mean, over the phone, I don't know how much people feel pressured because it's always that convenient.
Yeah, but that's rude, and it's in front of your kids, and it's not so...
Okay, so maybe there's a chinuch on how to politely say, I'm sorry, I really can't help you. I'm sorry.
Thank you for calling. Tisku the mitzvahs, right. We're supporting them. Right. Like, this year, I'm only doing my local institutions.
Would you like to buy a raffle ticket?
You'll have to speak with him. He's not available.
Ever. Right. That's good.
Right. Well, that's what we do, because it ended up being a Shalom Bayis issue. I was like, that's it. I'm not giving anything anymore.
Yeah, I mentioned in shul the other week, a tshuva, one of the contemporary poskim, was asked a question where a wealthy man was asked by an organization to say that he's giving $50,000 so that they could make a thing of that, and others would follow and give maybe not quite that amount, but you know, would give big amounts, which that is a strategy in fundraising. So he wanted to know, he's not really giving that amount, so does it constitute a neder? Is it like he made a promise? So the posik said, you know, is there a problem with that? So the poskim responded, like, a wrong question but right answer. There is a problem with that, but the problem isn't a neder. You didn't make a neder because you said from the outset to the recipients that you're not giving it. The problem is Gnevus Das. You can't, you're getting everybody else to give based on a false premise. You're creating a misimpression. That's called Gnevus Das, creating a misimpression. We have to be careful with that because most of advertising and marketing involves some measure of sheker. The question is, where do you draw the line? I mean, anything you do when you market something, you're showing the best part of it. You're not, you know, we sell a mediocre product which some people like and some people don't, and we're hoping you'll be one of the people who like it too. Nobody does that.
There's a plaque in a local whatever, and there are two, all the names. It's anonymous, and then below it says anonymous. So the question is, somebody says, I'm the second anonymous. Right. Or do you say, on the other hand, I try to think about this because we thought it was ridiculous, but then I thought, why in the world would you write anonymous twice?
Maybe it's two different people.
Exactly. Right. But you could say to the first, no, like you're engraving
it. Two people that want to be anonymous.
Right, because then it becomes a very good strategy. Many people give anonymously. You know, you could be the third.
Right.
You know, like it's suddenly
they have like how many donors they have.
Exactly. So I just thought that that was a sort of interesting case. Like it's not asking the person to like give more than they want or to like, because I could see if somebody puts their name on a big plaque, then the next person thinks, I want you on mine at that level. So anonymous is a very popular family.
Well, sometimes that is what happens. People don't feel they can do something all around, so they don't want to be...
hard.
But the basic idea I think we can all relate to here is that we shouldn't develop a messiah complex since I'm raising money. Therefore, you know, I can say whatever I want, and you know, the ends justify the means. It should not be based on checker. Some people justify it. Everybody does this, and none of that, they tell worse lies. So that's not an answer. God forbid that a person should have a share in this kind of conduct. It doesn't matter if the buyers are Jews or Gentiles. He should have b'tachon Hashem that Hashem will provide his needs, all his needs. V'adarabba, to the contrary, b'zchus zeh yishlach Hashem bracha b'maaseh yadav. In the merit of this, that what he does is honest, Hashem will send a blessing in the work of his hands. Next, midvar sheker tirchak, a pasuk that we read a couple weeks ago in Parashas Mishpatim. I actually gave a little talk on this at KTA a few days ago. It's forbidden to tell something untrue, even when it's not relevant to money. Nobody's losing any money. I'm not selling something on a false pretense or anything like that. Because the pasuk says, there's a great vart, by the way. The next phrase in that pasuk is "V'naki v'tzadik al tarog," an innocent person and a righteous person you shall not kill. So the simple shot of the connection of the two is stay away from falsehood. And if there's a false court, if there's a place where they do things based on falsehood and it's all corrupt, stay away from it so you don't end up killing the Naki and the Tzaddik. Meaning the first half of the Pasuk and the second half, or the first phrase and the second phrase, are the same thing. However, I don't know who was the first to say this, but some say, no, it means nevertheless. Midvar sheker tirchak, stay away from falsehood, but not at the expense of Inaki Vitzadik al Tarog. Don't kill anybody. Don't cause terrible harm. I was asked to speak last week about, when are you allowed to stretch the truth? When is it permissible? We try very hard to stay away from anything false, but there are times when the truth can cause devastating harm. So then, the halacha allows and even requires that we change the truth or don't show the truth, etc. So, as I put it, falsehood is a bad thing. It's a dangerous chemical, but there are times when you need a dangerous chemical to heal somebody. It could be like a drug that a person needs in a certain circumstance. So it's not generally a good thing. It's generally a very bad thing, but there are cases where it's necessary. Chazal say you're not allowed to engage in genevas da'as, again, which means stealing the impression, stealing the mindset of a person. It means you make him think something that's false, whether Jew or Gentile. We daven every day. Guard my tongue from bad and my lips from speaking trickery. Persons be very, very careful that sheker shouldn't leave his mouth. As our chachamim exhort us, anybody who switches with his words, switching meaning switching from the truth.
Can I give an example? This just happened to me. So I'm coming from the airport. I came from Israel. I was in Israel. And you know how, like, on the customs thing, it says there's two things that I like was okay. First of all, Janet told me that you could download this app now that you can go right through customs. Like, not you, Janet. Janet's fine. So I downloaded the app, and then they said, did you bring any food in? Now, I thought I was going to get stuck in Iceland, so I brought a whole suitcase of food because there was a storm, and that's where I was staying. So I'm thinking, okay, should I tell? I don't have a problem with telling the truth with the major things, but you know what I mean? Like, did anybody give you anything? Like, really?
like everybody says, no, right? Is it, that's really that's sheker. So I was like online. I'm saying, should I say that I bought the food or not? So I said, okay, I worked on myself the whole way. I was sweating. I'm going to tell the truth. I bought the food. So I told the truth on the app, and then because I wrote yes that I bought, you know, whatever, had cheese or whatever. I couldn't go through the quick line because I said yes. If you say yes. So at the end of the story was that I showed him my suitcase and I showed him all the food and he didn't take anything away. So paid to be honest. But like, it's these little things. Uh-huh. Like I heard my friends also, she told me that, you know, when they asked her, did you bring anything? And she said, yes, somebody gave me a pair of shoes for somebody. She said the whole day she was the only one, the guard told her, that answered yes to that question. Mm-hmm. And because of that, he let her go to the front of the line and pushed her through. Mm-hmm. So it's like a silly little thing. But like,
it's no, like, I know that I always sit there like, how much was it? I don't know. Was right. it more than that? Yeah. Did I bring anything for whatever?
Right. So yeah, we're talking about really stretching the truth. Like, you know what I mean? Do they really care if you bring the shoes or not? But like, you're supposed to tell the truth?
It's in the shoes.
What, yeah, I mean, they're looking for big, big. At a certain point, it becomes taxable. They want to know it's not.
Right, but they do. No, but when you just
the
get
food, or did right. you bring
right.
any
the food? Okay. Okay. Right.
Yeah, because sometimes there are things, fruits and things that.
Fruits and vegetables you can't bring into another country.
Well, he actually let me.
Right, but
and you saw it, but it was a silly example, but it's just like the little truth.
So as long as Maki's here, I want to tell when I stayed with Esther Chana, Maki's friend, and so you were making, I think, a bar mitzvah or something like that, so she gave me a gift for you, or what, I don't know what you were making, and it happened to be a knife, a challah knife, and then they asked me, did anybody give you anything when I was leaving, and I said, yeah, and they said, well, what is it? I said, I have no idea. It's wrapped up as a present. So they take it out, they unwrap it, they look at this knife, they look at me. I was honest, they said, okay, they wrap it back up.
I put a challah knife, stupid me, in my carry-on luggage. Rule one, do not put a challah knife in your carry-on. And I said, could you take it home? It'll be for a shop. You can keep it, just know I have to throw it away. I said, make sure somebody gets it out of the garage.
But you train yourself to tell the truth by doing that. Like, if you, it trains yourself in other situations. If you say, well, it's just a little thing, but if I tell the truth now, I'll train myself to always tell the truth. And if you fall into it's just a little thing this time, and it's just another thing the next time, then, you know.
Yeah, actually, what I said when I was talking about this the other day is that truth really starts on the inside of you. If you think about things truthfully, I gave a mushel. I said, if we'll make a mushel between health food and MS. So you can have somebody who won't ingest poison. And anything that's potentially poisonous, they'll immediately ask a shayla, call their doctor. But they're eating junk food all the time, so it's not a very healthy diet. MS is not just because it's false or not, but how do you think about situations? Why did I just say that? Did I really say that as a chesed, or did I say that to put the other person, you know? Everything should be analyzed. If MS starts on the inside, then, yeah, of course, one should always be speaking the truth. And what Jan just said, Chazal talk about not, I'm sure I'll get into some of these things, but being careful of saying something untrue even when it causes no harm just because of the training. It's Pasuk in Yirmiyah, Limdi Lashonim Daber Shakar, training their tongues to speak false. So there's a story in the Gemara there. Rav's wife was difficult, and she used to make him the opposite of what he asked for. If he asked for this for supper, she made that. If he asked for that, she made this. And then one day, all of a sudden, she's making the right stuff. So he says to his son, look at that. Things have changed. He said, no, I switched it. Meaning, if you told me you wanted meat, I told her you wanted fish, and then she made meat. Now, you said you wanted fish, you know, the son was flipping it. So he said, my son is smarter than me, but don't do it. Don't do it, because it's not necessary, and you train yourself to, if she asks, what did I ask for? Just tell her what I asked for, and if I get the opposite, that's it. Although it's interesting because the paradigm example of where you can change the truth is for Shalom Bayis. Hashem changes the truth on Avraham Avinu from Sarah. So some of Farshim ask that. There are Rishonim who say you should only change from the truth if it's going to be like a devastating harm. So they ask, was Avraham Avinu going to, you know, he's going to be throwing pots and pans? You called me old? I think the real answer is that some of the place where you have something coming from Tanakh with the drush of Chazal, that's meant to teach the lesson. It doesn't mean the particular circumstance was so critical. It just meant that Hashem says, I will even change for Shalom Bayis. So you change for Shalom Bayis when it's relevant, when it's, you know, because Hashem doesn't work with the same parameters.
He was doing that as a statement, kivayachal. I think that's probably the correct answer to that question.
What if somebody lies to their spouse all the time? What if somebody lies to their spouse all the time?
Profoundly problematic.
They tell themselves it's shalom bayit.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to create any relationship of trust, and one has to ask why it's necessary to be lying. If I have to lie all the time for shalom bayit, then there must be something wrong
with that bias.
Yeah. Right. Let's see. The end of that first paragraph. There are four categories of people who will not receive the Shechina, will not greet Hashem. V'kas Leisim, v'kas Chanefim, v'kas Shakronim, v'kas Mesapri Lashon Hara. Scoffers, Chanefim we translate as flatterers, but it means people who just tell people what they want to hear. Not the truth, but just to make everybody happy, especially when the party you're making happy really needs to be told to be put in its place. These are categories of people who will not greet the Shechina. They're not makabel p'nei Shechina. I'm sorry, Hanya?
Aaron did that. He went to one person and said, the other person thinks so highly of you, he wants to make up with you, and he did the same thing to the under.
Right, and then
they made up.
Right, that's not chanupa. Chanupa is where somebody's bad, he's doing something evil, and I tell him he's a great guy. That's called chanupa. Where people are essentially good, but they're upset, and you get each one in a better mood about the other person, and ultimately they get to that point, that's good. You're right, there's a small measure of sheker in that, let's say, because he said the other person has good feelings for you when it was not yet true, but since it's leading in that direction, that's okay. But chanupa is where the person is bad, and you want to make him happy, so you tell him he's good.
What were the other two?
So, scoffers, chanefim, we just described, shakranim are liars, and those who speak Lashon Hara. Mesapre Lashon Hara. As the Chofetz Chaim points out, there's a difference between somebody who did an aver versus somebody who is, quote-unquote, described as that's his character. Mesapre Lashon Hara means people who, like, that's their thing. If you don't have anything nice to say, come sit by me. You know, that kind of... it doesn't mean somebody who was nichshol, he spoke Lashon Hara one time, although that's not good, but that's not described as Mesapre Lashon Hara. Matzah, and again, Rav Kestenbaum sometimes gives examples that I think were meant more for Yeshiva Bachram, but if this comes up in your life, call a kavod. Matzah, she'echet shol mechaver lahazbe lo eze gemara. It happens that somebody comes over to his friend and says, can you explain to me this gemara? V'chaver v'chla lo yodeh, he has no idea. He doesn't know which side to read it from. V'meshiv lo baratzli. I don't have a full grasp of that gemara. Haim zeu ha'emes shelo baratzla? Is that true? Is that a full grasp? V'chima ha'safek shelo? What exactly is the safek? He's being a little sarcastic. Ke'aktos o ke'anasivas? Whether you should adopt the approach of the Ketos HaChoshen to this gemara or of the Nasivas HaMishpat? Those are two of the major lumdus shesvarim. V'mshol chaveiro perush ezamila? V'chi yesh lo safek bazeh? The person is asking whether a certain word means. Does he have a doubt? Elish Adam is bayish milomer any yode. He's embarrassed to say, I don't know. Achen tzrichim lisraga lahodos ala emes. Al derosh amu chazal, lamad lashon chalomer any yode. A person has to be willing to admit to the truth along the lines of what Chazal said. Train your tongue to say, I don't know. Rashi writes in a few places, I don't know. Don't know what it means. The truth is, you know, people say in Musar Vart that Rashi in those places is trying to teach you this mita, which may be true. I think there's also a practical thing. Rashi's trying to tell you, I know the pshatim that are offered in this word or this thing, and I don't. I still don't know the pshat, meaning I don't accept them. U'maisib Rabbi Yisrael Salanter Zatzal. We have the following story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, as you can see in the parentheses, cited in the Sefer Madrega Sa'odam, in the second section called Cheshbon HaTzedek. Madrega Sa'odam is the altar of Nevardok. Beautiful sefer. It's been reprinted. I have a nice copy of it at home. The altar of Nevardok was an extreme Musar personality, one of the towering Musar figures. So he has a section where he's really talking about not needing the acclaim of people, if I recall correctly. But anyway, he cites the following story. Kishabod Levilna Lehafetz Shem Ruach HaMusar. Yisrael Salanter went on a campaign. He felt that the world was missing something, that in earlier generations people studied Torah and that got them to where they needed to be in Midos, and something was creating a disconnect, and people needed like a megadose of Musar. It wasn't enough just from what came from regular Torah study. We need to make Musar a focus to get us back to the equilibrium where we're supposed to be. He felt extremely strongly about this. So when he came to Vilna to spread the spirit of Musar, he established the yeshiva, and he's quoting word for word from the Alter Navarik here. He used the word chilukim. He told over chilukim means distinctions. What it means is he was giving a shiur, and everything looks the same, and you have questions. Then you show, no, this is this way, and this is that way. The Rajba fits into this approach, and the Ramban fits into that approach. And look, you see it here too, and you see it to be able to show the distinctions within the Gemara. In order to influence the Talmidim in Vilna, the spirit of Musar. Basically, Yisrael Salanter was a Gaon Adir, and at times he had to show his prowess in order to be accepted. You want to be accepted in the Olam HaYeshiva? Show that you know something. There was another yeshiva of this Rav Mordechai Meltzer. And people were basically comparing. So if you want to, if you have something that you feel is important and you want to get on the scene, you have to show that your yeshiva is solid. Pamachas, one time Kasha Higad Hachiluk, he was telling over this type of distinction in the shir. Talmud Echad mi Talmidei Rav Mordechai Meltzer Zatzal Shalos So Betoch Hachiluk Shalos Shaila. And one of the Talmidim who was really from the other yeshiva, he asked a Kasha. He asked a question. V'hayil Ola Rabbi Yisrael Salanta Zatzal Tekev Chamisha Ofanu Matarza. He had in his mind immediately five different ways to answer the question. It's a good question. I could go this approach and I could back it up. I could go that approach and back it up. He had five approaches in his mind. Then each one of the five, there would have been enough there that the asker would have been pleased. Oh, good answer. Very good. Stark. Stark atina. But nevertheless, since he knew to himself, he knew the truth is, the question is better than the answer. Better than that answer, and that answer, and that answer, and that answer, and that answer. He really, the truth is, that's a good question, that calls into question the whole approach. Even though he could have answered in five ways, that would have been enough. He felt it was not really a sufficient answer to the question. Lo asakein, he didn't do so. Elo asa tnuim hayad v'amar Yisrael Yisrael atalomid Musar hanachlo. He like made some kind of gesture to himself. Yisrael Yisrael, you study Musar? Leave it. Vayara takef mehabima ki'ilu eni yodeh davar mal hashiv. He stepped down. He stepped down from the bima as if he had no response. Nasan makom shiyuchlu kulam lachziko kein, and he created the potential that everybody would assume that he couldn't answer the question. Because of all of Hamadrigas, obviously, if you realize it, Rishol Salanter was studied, like every word of his. Rishol was an unbelievable figure. Every action, every word. He was such a deep person, and it's such a godless Adam, penetrating truth. So the Alter Navarik is going to study this incident.
I don't understand. Who asked the question and who had... There were five answers to the question.
He's trying to sell Musar. Not for himself.
He can give a very high level shear and...
Right, that's what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
Remember, this is the Dar Dea. This is where there were big people in Klal Yisrael. So right. There's another big person who has a yeshiva there, which was not a Musar yeshiva. Yisrael opens a yeshiva and he's giving a shear. And the boys used to try out the different yeshivas. So there's a boy who's really in the other yeshiva.
And he
asks a question on what Rabbi Yisrael is saying.
Right.
And Rabbi Yisrael had five potential responses in his mind. He could have blown him away. First of all, he could say like this and like this and like this and I'll prove it like that. Second, like that.
Right.
Ooh, what a gun. So Rabbi Yisrael said, but you know what? It's really a better question than the answers. So he said, it's a good question. And he stepped down. So the Madragas Adam writes about this. Mavel ma'od ha'nisayon hazeh. The test he had here is like it mavel.
So wait a minute. So the Musar lesson is that that Salanter doesn't think that it's not so important that he could show he could find five ways. It's better for this Tommy to feel like that was such a great question.
No. The truth of Torah.
I don't understand.
Truth of Torah. The Alter of Navarik is going to unpack this incident for us a little bit.
Okay.
But basically, the idea is I know I feel I'm spreading Torah, and it's so important for everybody to think that I'm great. But truth of Torah is greater, and unless I feel 100% that for the greater good, I should give the answers, then the truth of Torah is better.
Because having five answers means there's not one answer to that question.
Maybe, maybe, yeah. maybe not.
She has more patience than I do.
Maybe, maybe not. Let's see. Ma'abil Moda Nesayna Zeh Hagam Shekol Hagodoso Es Achiluk Haya Belishmo Shel Hashpoz Limit HaMusar I'll call a Talmidim. It's not like Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, hey, you know, I'm also a learned person. I should get out there and get my name. Believe me, that was not his whole...
That's why I don't understand. He was like such a famous person. What does he have to sell Musar for? Like, wouldn't people flock to him?
No.
No.
Musa
no.
was vehemently opposed. Uh-huh. I don't think there were more intense battles in the Frum world in the last few hundred years as were the wars for and against Musa. And actually, when once Rabbi Yisrael passed, it became worse because he didn't have that kind of personage. Even though he had great Talmidim, but they weren't quite what he was. And vehement. It shows you something about the greatness of Klal Yisrael. Like today, I don't know, good in Musar, that's great. Good in Chassidus, that's great. Good. Like, show me greatness in anything. But the fealty to the Masorah was so strong that people felt anything that could potentially undermine or could steer us a little bit off course, it's a shinui, it's not the way it was. They were so opposed to that it was fierce. Fierce battle. There were very strong letters back and forth and meetings, and of course, when the smaller people get involved, it gets somewhat ugly. But Musar was vehemently opposed. Vehemently opposed.
But not the teachings of it per se, because no, that's the character development.
Changing the emphasis.
It's like bringing in an elective. Like we've got a was it the amount of time that you'd lose, or that they were? Wasn't it more about like? Don't deviate from the curriculum, so to speak,
you have an
as
army.
Opposed to the content.
Right,
of
you have an army
was.
That's working extremely hard. This is the way it's got to be done. This is the way we're going to be secure. And somebody else comes along and says, no, don't do those drills. We're doing something different. We need much more of this. Well, if people were mostly nefesh and felt their bearers of the Messiah, you're talking about a generation where somebody, you know, look at Eastern Europe, people hardly had any food, any money, you know, all the stories. But what they had was the commitment to Torah, and then somebody comes along, and that edifice, which is supposed to be a certain way, you come in and you're telling me, no, I'm going to do this thing where you're going to sway back and forth, repeating mantras, instead of learning through pages and pages of Gemara with Rishonim and Achronim, and getting it's a change of emphasis, and exactly because it's the crown, you're touching the crown, this is not something peripheral, so it had fierce opposition. Even though you're talking about somebody of Yisrael Salanta's greatness, his Talmidim, I think, got the most opposition. Rabitzel of Petterberger, Rabitzel Blazer was maligned, like you wouldn't believe. And he was a totally egoless person who was a Gaon Adir, he was a Posek, one of the Poskei Ador, and people wrote terrible things about him. Again, the terrible things they wrote were from Saul.
Because they didn't learn Musar.
Right.
Had they learned Musar, they never would have said
no, but at the top levels, there were people who all along were opposed, who were great people. And by the way, they were tzaddikim themselves. Chaim Brisker was opposed to the introduction of Musar. There are many people. I said, we respect what you're trying to do, but you don't change. You don't make make adjustments to our Masorah. And it's unnecessary. We ourselves felt you don't make adjustments to the Masorah except where the Masorah is going off course and you're trying to get it back. That's what the... just to wrap up, because we're over time already. You can imagine, Rabbi Yisrael is saving the world. Well, the rest of us, when we talk about we're saving the world, we know we're delusional. Rabbi Yisrael really is saving the world. It really is. And by the way, whatever Musar we have in yeshivas today, it's not the same intensity, but it was a product of this movement and his strength of character. So it was so critical that he be respected. But here, he felt in this case, it was not necessary. To have the honesty, not to have a bit of ego or wanting to defend oneself from embarrassment, in that incident, he felt not necessary. Musar will survive even if I don't answer the question. Didn't answer the question, and his Talmidim were like that. Just to wrap up, Ritzel Petterberger, I've mentioned this story before. He was one of Rabbi Yisrael's three main Talmidim, and one time he had a meeting. He was at a meeting of Rabbanim, and the Beis Halevi was there. Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the father of Rabbi Chaim Brisker, and Rabbi Yosef Ber, people speak and learning. Rabbanim speak and learning. So Rabbi Yosef raised a question. He said, I have this kasha, it's a very strong question. And I thought you could say it like this. And he said his answer, my son Chaim, the future of Chaim Brisker, father of modern day Lumbus, if you will, he won't say like this. And he gave a different answer, two brilliant answers. And people, I think, were enthralled. It was an interesting conversation. You're talking about Gedolei Torah, and they're talking back and forth. Itzel Petterig was just silent. So when Beis Halevi got home, he said, you know, I'd never met him before. He didn't. They say he's a chacham. I didn't really see very much. I have a sefer. Let me see what he has in his sefer. He takes his sefer, the pre-Yitzchak, off the shelf. Oh, he has a piece on this topic. Oh, he asked my question. Oh, he gives my answer. And he gave Reb Chaim's answer. So he knew everything that was being said, but he didn't feel it was necessary. Maybe he felt for his character it was better if he didn't try to impress. But that was the strength of character of the Gedolei HaMusar. So even if we're not at that level of honesty with oneself, but something to strive for.
But so as a result of seeing that, Beis HaLevi say, was he more open to...
Oh, yeah.
Then he changed his mind.
He changed his mind about the approach, but he had a stunning impression of his greatness in Torah and his strength of character. They didn't feel the need to speak up, which is really quite something. On the other hand, there's a sefer Mechitzas Rabbeinu of vignettes that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told over. There were times when Rabbi Yisrael Salanta did flex Godel muscle. I told him, I'm much more learned than you, and I'll show you. And he did that, but it was without any ego. It was just when he felt it necessary, as evidenced by the fact that when he didn't feel it 100% necessary, he'd just walk off. By the way, Rabbi Chaim Brisker was an opponent to Musar at his tryout cheer in Volozhin. Same thing happened. Somebody asked a question. No, what happened was he was in the middle of saying a shir in the Rambam, and he remembered that the Rambam writes something in the Perish HaMishnah that doesn't sound like it's in consonance with what he was saying. So in the middle of a shir, and nobody would have realized it. In the middle of a whole shir, he said, oh no, never mind, it's a mistake. This was his prava, his big tryout shir in Volozhin. But the truth of Torah was more important to him than... saying fancy Torahs, so something to strive for. Chazal are critical, since Purim, we'll just end with the Purim, but it's relevant. Chazal are critical of Achashverosh for being wishy-washy. Ahibi me Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? It wasn't the day of Achashverosh, he is Achashverosh. It sounds like, in case you missed it, Achashverosh, he was Achashverosh. Chazal say, Achashverosh who killed his wife because of his advisor, Achashverosh who killed his advisor because of his wife. Achashverosh wanted to do kirtzon ish va'ish. He wanted to do like every man's will. Ish tsar va'oyev Haman, ish Yehudi haya b'shushan abira. He thinks he can make Haman happy and Mordechai happy. Achashverosh has no yashrus. There's no MS. He's a slick politician. And it's almost like Chazal are more critical of him than of Haman. Haman, at least you know where you stand. Gotta wipe him out, but you know where you stand. But Achashverosh, you know, he'll make an enemy. He'll make a treaty with the good guy, with the bad guy. You don't know where you stand. So the Midas HaEmes, if you look at the Megillah, like from the outset, it's almost as if we're being told, if he has one trait, at least you know what he's after. So Achashverosh, Chazal, you're more critical of, because Yashrus is the Yisod HaBinyan. Okay, Afreilich and Perm, thank you.